Welcome to the Realize Soul podcast with Tessa Alburn. Receive a healthy dose of soothing vibes, heartfelt stories, and sweet soul wisdom for thriving outside of the conventional world.
Hello, this is Realize Soul, and I am Tessa Alburn. And today I have a wonderful guest. I think you're going to love her. I've known this guest for more than a decade now. We're in our second decade.
Yes, it's a while, isn't it?
It is, yes. And I want you to know that this gal is just, she's someone, when I think of people who live from soul, who live from their purpose and their connectivity, Rachel is one of them. So Rachel is a story coach. She's also a specific kind of a numerologist, and she's a mentor to entrepreneurs and change makers. Now we're going to get into a little bit more about how she's a numerologist, because it's going to apply here to our soulful conversation. And some people affectionately know her as the name whisperer. So Rachel uses a precise system of spiritual numerology called soul contract reading. And through this, she's helped hundreds of people access their passion and their sense of purpose. She's drawn on years of training in somatic interactive therapy, holodynamic inquiry, movement therapy, and meditation. And she's also led retreats, which is one of the ways that I originally know her from. She's led retreats and workshops around the world. Her great love is to help women find their voice so they can fully embody and express their essence. And as co-founder of the Peaceful Woman Corp and creator of the Quantum Woman Entrepreneur Program, Rachel knows the true transformative power of the retreat experience. So Rachel Flower, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's so good to be with you, Tessa. I love it.
I love it too. It's so wonderful. Every time we get a chance to quote unquote play in our field, it's always fun. It's always enlightening. And I have a feeling a lot of my listeners are going to really love what you have to share today.
I hope so. Let's see.
Let's see. So I'd love to begin with the key question here that gets things rolling into that soul for conversation, which is, what is realized soul to you? What does it mean to you, Rachel?
It is really about being aware of your essence, I believe. And realized, I love the name of your work, because it really is not just about being a soul, but realizing it, right? We're all souls, but how many people actually live and experience through their essence, meaning your strength, your joy, your passion, the things that really make you tick, and that comes out as expression through the way that you communicate, the way you move, the way you do life. So it's really soul in action, I suppose.
I love that. That's amazing. Or soulfulness
in action. I love that you said at the beginning of this conversation, you said we're having a soulful conversation. And that's an aspect of realized soul. How do we communicate? How do we engage with other people and realize their souls by seeing them and bringing out their essence? I think it's a two-way thing, or a many-way thing. So, yeah, it's about that osmosis of really living and breathing our essence and accessing that. And I know that that's your great passion, Tessa.
Absolutely.
That's why you do what you do.
That's right. And, you know, this piece that you just mentioned around the interaction, you know, the interactivity, it's like none of us is meant to just sort of be in a bubble with our soul, right, and our purpose. There is a flow of energy, and I'm so happy you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I think for my listeners, they're going to be like, well, what does that mean? You know, what am I supposed to do now?
Sounds nice, but what do you do about it? Yeah, right. Yeah. I'll have some of that.
Well, I know that you have been on a really big soul journey yourself.
Yeah.
And You know, you at one point mentioned to me, for you, it felt like it was a quest. Yeah. So can you just like give a brief sense of what that quest entailed for you? Maybe some of the struggles, some of the challenges, and what happened when you overcame them?
Yes, absolutely. I realized, you know, when I was talking with you before, it was lovely to revisit some of those early turning points in my life, you know, and I remembered even as a little kid, I would have these flashes of something beyond the physical. I mean, I was always very curious. I was brought up with, you know, a physics father and an English teacher mother. And so I was curious about the world and how things worked. And I remember feeling that there was something else, something outside, some presence. And I know as I got into my teens, I started reading books like Siddhartha and Richard Bach, you know, Illusions, and mm-hmm. and Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and Carlos Castaneda. I was super curious about what that thing was that I sensed as a kid, something beyond this three-dimensional world. And then I know when I went off to Hong Kong in my early 20s, I started doing a lot of meditation, and I joined meditation groups. And I also, in that process, confronted a lot of what I didn't like in myself. I realized, in fact, that was also what was driving me. I think deep inside, as a teenager and as I was moving into my teens, I felt this kind of pointlessness about so much of what life seemed to entail, you know, the things that we study, the things that we do in school. Like, what the heck does it mean? Why are we doing this? And I even in my university years, these bouts of depression where it was like it didn't seem to add up and I didn't know why and I couldn't get my finger on it. You know, so I went on this quest of really understanding the nature of soul. I wouldn't have called it that at the time. I think I was just trying to figure myself out. You know, why do I feel this pain inside? Why do I feel like there's something wrong, but I don't know what it is? And so I studied Vipassana. I went to India lots of times and studied meditation there. You know, I even almost became sort of tantamount to a nun. You know, I lived a celibate life for 12 years and I was walking around in white saris and teaching and learning meditation, all in the name of what is this? Who am I really? What is this ache inside of me that somehow wasn't being eased? You know, I could temporarily, I know I love nature and I was always outside in nature. And I think that was part of my solace. You know, growing up, I was outdoors so much of the time, even in the horrible English weather. And I was just loved. That was part of my soulfulness, I guess. I would communicate with trees and animals and the land. And I just needed that space. And I guess still now I'm living here in Tahoe, you know, with trees all around me and mountains. But this quest just kept going on and I started studying, you know, deeper forms of meditation and movement and somatics and core energetics and NLP and all these modalities that I'm like, who am I? What am I? So it kind of went on. And in the process, I would learn all these things and start to use them for myself. But then also it would spill off into the work that I would do with clients. I was always wanting to then turn around and use the tools that I had to help other people, because that was my passion. So it's really been a lifelong quest. You know, I'm almost 60 now, and it just doesn't stop. It's just this beautiful quest. Only it doesn't feel now like this great big gap, which it did earlier. It feels like I'm just refining and deepening, and there's a deeper calm inside of me because I feel all that work and all that searching gave me a lot of gifts along the way, and beautiful people and so much wisdom. There's some incredible people out there on the planet. And I have many, many teachers along the way who've guided me. And I stand on their shoulders today with everything that I do. And I'm very, very grateful. So yeah, it's been a very long journey and it continues, I think, until my last breath. And then it'll continue in some other form, I guess.
Yes, I feel that similarly in on many points that you've mentioned. And one of the things as you were talking that just really grabbed me is because I feel like this is something that shows up in my clients. You know, I think that's the reason that they're like, yes, I finally want to work with you. I want to do something about this. Yeah. It's the ache, right?
Yes.
It's the yearning.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't initially understand how to get the space that they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like to connect with it and to begin to understand. And not everybody can go around and join a meditation convent and do all these things, right? Like people are needing to connect with their soul now in real time.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you mentioned one thing for yourself, which is connecting with nature. So let me ask you, what other kinds of guidance could you give to my listeners that might help them to connect with and to listen to their souls?
Well, I'm a great believer in the body being a portal for our deeper awareness. I mean, there's a reason we have these beautiful bodies that we can work with, you know, that it's a two-way street. You know, we communicate with our bodies, but our bodies communicate with us. And this is part of my fascination with somatic work. And that is that, you know, when you're afraid, you feel it in your body, right?
Yes.
When you're full of joy, you feel it. When you love, there's a heart space that opens. When you're scared, your hackles rise. When you're angry, your jaw clenches, you know, your breath changes. And so that's part for me of that feedback loop. You know, this body gives me information and I can check in with it. And so in somatic work, we're looking at how do we connect with this primary consciousness as opposed to the secondary consciousness, which secondary consciousness would be mind and thinking and all of that conscious sort of stuff that goes on in our heads all the time. But then we've got the deeper nonverbal, we've got the physical sensation, and we've got our emotion. And if we can tap into that more and more, and there are little ways through the day that you can do that as well, that to me is a very powerful way of listening to ourselves, because the body is so cool. It will give you those feedback loops, right? I mean, I've had people do journaling, right? Just for example, journaling exercises, right? And you might think, okay, I'm writing down ideas and I'm thinking, but not necessarily, because actually if you're journaling and you stay connected with your body and your feelings, you're actually going to have a deeper connection with the words that you're writing. But afterwards, I remember one exercise when I was doing a Zoom meeting and I had some people do 2 minutes of journaling just to kind of touch base with themselves. Mm-hmm. And one guy, I remember distinctly, he came out afterwards and I said, well, how's everything going for everyone? And he said, you know what? I just realized I'm anxious. You know, I've had a good day. Everything's good. But I didn't even know that I had this low-grade anxiety running through. And he said, when I was journaling, I could feel in my body, you know, this tension in my gut and this tightness in my jaw. And I took a look at that as I was journaling. And I realized, wow, there were some things I was worrying about that were subconscious. They were the normal thinking level, but that the act of just taking a moment to journal helped him connect. Breathing, just taking a moment, even for a minute, in between phone calls or in between conversations or activities, just to stop and watch breathing is a powerful way to go, yeah, where am I? It's kind of like a reboot or a sort of taking stock of that moment in time, and we can catch up with ourselves. Because I don't know about you, I can be very speedy. I want to get millions of things done and I try and do too many at once. You know, I still can fall into that trap. But when I, throughout the day, catch myself and do these little mini reps, you know, awareness reps with myself, you know, just feeling my feet on the floor or feeling my breath or noticing, just looking right now, I'm looking out at these trees that are swaying in the wind. And if I took just a minute to be really conscious of what I'm looking at, somehow it just calms. And it, in a way, it's a bit like, it's a bit like the surface of the water stills and then you can look deeper down. But if we're running around in life and just going from one external activity to the other, it's just like what I'm seeing right now as I look out over Lake Tahoe. It's a windy day and the water is really choppy and you can't see down very deep. Things are moving too much. So I take these moments throughout the day to check in with myself, and it's just like stilling the water or letting the dust settle. And then, oh yeah, then I get a chance to receive insight or just remember, oh my God, I didn't call that person, or wow, I forgot to eat. You know, it's kind of like
yes.
These little things that bubble up when you're just being more conscious. But when we're unconscious and just so externally focused, which is easy for all of us to do, I know, it's kind of an ongoing work in progress, really.
Right. Well, okay. So I'm getting inspired here. Yeah. I'm going to do something different. I haven't done this before with guests. So even in the paradigm of listening to a podcast, right, as people are listening, they're like, part of them is kind of going out to the podcast, like trying to connect externally.
Yes.
Right. Here's what we're going to do, everyone. We're just going to take a moment for a miniature reset to come back into yourself by taking a deep breath. Just pause whatever you're doing. Take a deep breath. Good. Now take another one. Very good. All right, we're still here for you. We haven't gone anywhere. We're not abandoning you. We're going to keep talking. And I'd love to just ask Rachel, like, what did you notice just in those breaths? What's one thing you noticed, Rachel?
I noticed the carriage of my head. And I noticed that when I am efforting, when I am in the process of trying to get an external result, my neck goes a little forward and my chin juts out, which takes me out of alignment.
And look at all of that. Look at all of that you notice.
right.
Like a moment. And then you're like, oh, I'm out of alignment.
It's very subtle. It's very subtle. And so it's kind of like, yeah, let me relax back into this conversation. I don't have to get to a destination. I don't have to do anything. And let me be more receptive. So it's a good reset in this moment. I love that you did that, Tessa, because it's so easy to just go along. And then this, what do we do with this deathly silence in the middle of a podcast? I wonder how many people went reaching for emails or thinking about, oh my goodness, you know, I need to go do this thing, you know, it's so.
Right. And of course there were probably some listeners, you know, this would all be normal, folks. I want you to get this. Like if you, in that breath, you were like, oh my gosh, I got to get 20 things done. I totally forgot about this and the other.
Right.
And now your mind is like thinking that through. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's all okay. And you may have noticed you're like, I don't like the quiet. Or what's happening? This is not normal. And it might have bothered you or didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Or it might have been really cool. Like you could have any experience, but the experience is yours. And there's information there for us.
You know, one thing I do as well, Tessa, I have this really little notebook that I carry around with me. And it's, you know how I call it the shopping list effect. You know, when things are actually written down, then you can sort of let them go in a way. I've written it down, I know, and then you're not freaking out. Go, you know, eggplant, eggplant, eggplant. It's in the book, right? I don't have to keep thinking about it. And so I have it's a small book. It's only probably, I don't know, 5 inches by 3, and it fits in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And so I've got it with me to jot those things down or those insights or those ideas. And that's because I've got a very busy mind. You know, I do business branding with people. I help them think of ideas and names for businesses. I know I do numerology, and we're talking about, you know, names, people's names as well in numerology, but I get so many ideas. Oh, that would be a good name for a business. That's a good tagline. So instead of sort of like letting it run around in my head, I'll just quickly write it down, you know, and then it's out. It's done. Totally. And then I can come back to it.
I love it. I love that you carry around a little notepad for that specific purpose. And there's actually been scientific studies on the phenomenon of the shopping list, yes, where if people wrote down the items and then they say lost the list or they couldn't access it again, most of the time they remembered like 90, I think it was 90% of what they did.
Yes, exactly. Right?
So there's also something that happens inside us when we make that written connection.
Yes.
There's
definitely. And you've got voice memos as well. You know, sometimes, like, let's say you don't have a book with you or something, mm-hmm, or you don't like writing things down. I've got probably, I think, about 300 voice memos now on my phone, where just little things come to me, little ideas, and or even song tunes. Sometimes an idea for a melody will come, and I'll just quickly record it, and then it's done. So
yes,
yeah.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here on that one.
Right.
I have so many audio files from where I've had ideas for chants, yeah, and this, that, and the other. Yes, and certainly any kind of app that feels good.
Apps,
to
yeah,
you, right? As an individual, that's the one you want to keep using them or have a, yeah, couple at your disposal.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Thank you for getting us into that fun stuff. And yeah, also, so the different aspects of just taking, yeah, that moment to jot something down can, yeah, serve us in a number of different ways. It gets it out of the constant running, the chatter in the background of our mind. It also just supports us, and we're a little more connected to the information. We're a little more, yeah, settled, what I call settled or self-regulated.
Oh, settled. I love that word. Yeah, that's like I was saying earlier, you know, letting it settle, let the dust settle. And
exactly,
then you can see, you can sense, you can feel, and come back into this moment, as opposed to being running off ahead into this fictitious future or kind of pulling from the past and looping. So
yes.
Yes.
You know, okay, so two things. I do want you to speak in a few moments about the name, the soul contract and the numerology,
yeah,
and all that. But before we do that, I have a question around like the hero's journey, right? So as we're going through whatever our journey looks like, and it might be a 2-year journey, it might be a lifetime of seeking, it might be like a journey that feels like a big one at first, and then it relaxes into something, and then we choose another journey. But
yeah,
for you, what do you think is one of the, like, what kinds of, I know what it is, what kind of expectations do people set themselves up for in terms of a soul journey or outcomes that they're grasping for, or maybe even just the challenges that they might come up against? Any of that, what's coming alive in you right now that you want to speak to?
I think of this thing of, I'm looking at my own journey, and I've studied the hero's journey so much, partly because of story coaching, right? Helping people to find their story or stories, because we have many stories that we can use in different ways to grow from, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel that to come to the original part, you know, of your question, you know, what do people expect? Sometimes we can expect too much too quickly, and then we can fall short and then beat ourselves up. You know, we might compare ourselves with some fantastic yogi or somebody we know who's just seems to have it all together, even if they don't behind the scenes, but, you know, on paper or on Instagram, they look amazing. And then we're thinking, I should be like that. I ought to be like that. And then the gap just seems endlessly big. And where this comparison can then cause this, you know, pain. But I think also something I mentioned to you when you and I were chatting the other day, this thing of broken promises to ourselves, when we don't end up getting where we want to go and we fall short and then we fall off the wagon, you know, let's say we have some kind of vision, I'm going to, you know, be able to sort of sit quietly in meditation by this date, and then we can't do it very quickly, and then we give up, or and we stop even doing it, then we've basically almost broken a promise to ourselves. you know, in some way. And then that sets us up to not trust ourselves. So that then when we are creating these visions in the future, a part of us is going, yeah, right. Yeah. Sure, you're really going to do that. Like, yeah, you like
I'm
the way you did
out for
that.
You.
Like yeah, you did yeah. that. Like you messed up last week on that thing. And like, yeah, right. And so there's always this cynical part, which is the judge, the inner critic, that's already setting us up to fail, because it's almost trying to save ourselves from ourselves, because it's saying, look, if you try this, you're going to fail again, and it's going to hurt even more, right? So yes. there's that loop that can go on and can get worse and worse and worse and cause depression. And I think that's when I shared with you earlier about how I hit those bouts of depression in my, you know, it was my late teens and early 20s, especially when I was, and then later in life, I hit periods too, that it was just because I'd set myself up and then I'd beat myself for not getting where I thought I should be. And then I'd feel even worse. You know? And so then I'm like, you don't keep your promises. So, you know, what the heck? Just go eat worms, you know, or just go have a mediocre life, because you're never going to get where you want to go. Right. And so then it's just sort of, then you sort of fall into this, or I fell into this at times, just sort of a cynical complacency where I just like, okay, well, I'm not going to try for that because it's not going to work anyway. And so that can be such a setup for misery. Long term.
Definitely. And, you know, that apathy, that despond, you know, that takes hold then, and it's much harder to get out of it. So, you know, part of what I'm hearing you say is that when that critic comes in, because it can, right? When we set up too high expectations, or we're just not like kind to ourselves, and allow ourselves to make mistakes and have failures. But if that inner critic does jump in there and is wailing on us, we've got to take hold immediately. Like the sooner the better.
Yes.
Or get support, right? Like that's the time to reach out for kindness.
Yes, exactly. And I think one of my things that I love to do is help bring all of this out into the light. Right, things are much more scary when they're in the shadows. And if you walk into a dark room and there's stuff on the floor and you start tripping over it, it's scary. You know, there's something hanging from the ceiling, like in those old ghost trains, you know, the string that would be over the train. You're like, ah! And then there's scary things at every moment. Bring it out into the light. Put a hat on it. You know, I've got a hat on my critics, you know, and my critic and my judge and my saboteurs, you know. And I bring them out into the light. So when they do start playing up, then I name them and I'm like, oh, that's my judge, or that's my people pleaser, or that's my avoider, or that's my restless syndrome. You know, I will name it, which helps make it more friendly in a way, because as soon as something has a name, it's much less scary. Remember, Voldemort was the one that shall not be named.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Because when the people said it, it was really scary. So why don't we just bring it out into the light and normalize it and say, oh, yeah, we've all got these saboteurs. We've all got these mechanisms, which in essence were there to protect us. We created them in some way to help protect us in that moment of life when we were dealing with a problem. They just got a bit out of hand. They just started to take over, and then our higher self started to take a back seat. So it's all a power balance here. We want to bring the higher self up into a higher realm, but it's not through big, big things that we do. It's through the little habits we cultivate every day. 1 minute, 10 times a day is way better than one 10-minute thing once a day. Because you're getting in a habit. And I heard that actually, I was just talking with somebody yesterday about dog training. And they're saying that the best way to train a dog is 5 minutes a day, but in tiny little pieces. Mm. Right? When you're going through the door, or when you're doing, it's not like big, long sessions, because they get worn out and overwhelmed and confused. But it's the little things. And his dog was so well trained. Like, it was really impressive. And that's when I asked him, I said, how did you train that dog? And he told me, he said, you know, he was really working on it every day, little by little by little, and the dog got it.
Yes. So. And not that we're dogs, but our brains respond similarly. And the overwhelm can happen in a similar fashion for us, right? When we're trying, like I've worked with people in, say, like big group coaching programs, and they're like, I'm going to save all my homework for the weekend, and I'm going to try
and good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't work. Like they'll get, if they even get through it, then the one accomplishment they will have made is having gotten it done, but they really didn't get the benefit of it.
Do you know what? I agree. And I do have dogs inside of me, though, just to come back to your earlier comment of saying, not that we are dogs. I have a border collie inside of me that just wants to go get that stick, you know, and wants to go fetch it. So my saboteurs do relate to dog behaviors. Because I love dogs. I don't happen to have one. I love them. And I learn from them. You know, you've got your aggressive little chihuahuas that sort of growl at everything. And then you've got your border collies that want to go fetch things. And you've got your, you know, your big tough things that, you know, those, you know, the Jack Russells that don't want to let go of things when they're holding them. You know, I love looking at things through the lens of metaphor. So for me, that's also a fun way of making almost a game of this inner journey. That we can name it, create metaphors and bring it to life. And then we can engage with those metaphors in creative ways. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. I love that you just shared that with my audience. Yes. And so just to be clear, though, we don't all have to have dogs as our metaphor. We can make it whatever we want to.
You can have birds or trees or even cartoon characters or... You know,
absolutely.
It's a rocket ship.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So we can
whatever floats your boat.
It floats your boat. We can express our own way to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the whole piece around the naming, it gives us a sense of knowing. It gives us a sense of just understanding. This is just part of what's going on. It's not the whole essence of me.
Exactly. It's a model for understanding. It is not it. It's a model or a lens through which we can understand the world. And you'll probably hear me mix my metaphors all over the place. I'm obsessed with them because to me, it's a language that actually the language of metaphor does speak to the subconscious. Because,
absolutely.
You know, if you say, and also it's a way to describe things. If you're trying to describe a flavor, how would you describe a fruit flavor to somebody? You know, you could say it's or a new fruit like guava. How would you describe guava, right? It looks like an apple a bit, but it tastes a little bit more tangy than apple, but it's got the same texture, right? And it's a little slightly citrusy in its taste. So we're using comparisons and suddenly you get it because I can't literally describe the flavor of guava. Because I'm not like a wine taster who uses all these technical terms, right?
Exactly. So, well, we might even use a color.
A color, right? Yes.
Yeah. We might say guava is more like pink than white, like an apple.
Yes, exactly. So it's just, it helps solidify things in our minds. And then the labeling, like you say, it makes it more playful. It makes it more a sense of control. In an interesting way. Suddenly now, I can see this. I've got names. That's why we name things. You know, it makes it much easier to communicate.
Yes. And I want to get on to the soul name numerology thing. You said something so cool, which was how you said play and control.
Yeah.
And most people, when they think of play, like they think sort of like out there, like goofy, goofball, whatever. They have a lot of unusual associations and not all good ones. And control is anything but play, but the two can work together.
Yes.
When we are conscious of them.
I think of the analogy of skiing, because to me that's play and control, you know, the dance of the two together. Mm-hmm. Because there is the fundamental law of gravity, which is going to pull you down the hill. And you can't control gravity, but you can control your relationship with gravity, meaning to what you do with your weight, what you do with your positioning, what you do with your mindset. And so as I'm going down the hill, I'm controlling what I do with my weight, but I'm allowing gravity to pull me. So there's that, and it's very playful because I feel like I'm dancing as I go down the hill. And I'm, you know, I think of when I'm going around other skiers, it's like a game or a dance. It's like, what's my line? I'm going to have to go here and anticipate this person over here. And it becomes like this beautiful sort of choreographed experience. It's very playful for me. It's very uplifting. It's very enlightening. But there's a lot of control and
yes,
surrender.
Indeed.
It's a blend of control and surrender because I have to surrender to the elements, the steepness of the hill, the curve of the slope, you know, that the texture of the snow, the wind, the sunshine, all the elements. These are things I can't control, but I can control the way I respond to them.
Bingo. That's it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you for all of that.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite sports. I love it.
You're definitely tapping into some of my memories and just like I could feel it in my body as you were talking about it.
Yes. Right? Yes. You know, skiing.
I was never a great skier or anything, but I have had that experience of being in the surrender and the playfulness and the freedom. And
freedom,
control, and not having control. All of it.
I do get out of control sometimes. It's a scary thing, you know.
Yes, it can be. All right. I know that everybody wants to know about the numerology. So please share what it is that you do and how it can make a difference in someone's life.
So this form of numerology is a little different than what most people are probably familiar with. Instead of there being a number for each letter of the alphabet chronologically, you know, A equals 1, B equals 2, C equals 3, etc., this form of numerology goes back to a deeper sound relationship. It comes to it's based on the Hebrew glyphs, and the Hebrew glyphs are based on, so say, the original sounds of God, whatever. I don't really understand the full origin of them, but there's a certain connection with sound, just like there is with the Sanskrit language, these original languages. There's a deeper connection with sound. So what this form of numerology does is basically translate the phonetic sound of your name into a number based on the Hebrew glyph. And then we put those numbers together into a certain format. And then in that format of numbers, in this case, it's a star, we can look at certain qualities that you have. That in a way, I think of it like a homing signal, that you came into this world and you were given a name. And that name is like a homing signal. And you might think, well, my parents gave me my name. How's that to do with me? Well, what if you gave yourself that name through your parents? What if it's not a random label that was just slapped onto you, you know, John Jones, but it is you actually when you're in the womb or even when you came out of the womb, you're broadcasting that name as a frequency. Your parents, through their subconscious, pick that up. Then your name is then like a homing signal, which contains within it frequencies that will, when we decode them, give you pointers to challenges that you might have, talents that you might have, goals that you have, and your deeper soul destiny. And the soul destiny number that we come up with is a number that's really a life theme that runs through everything. And we have gift and talent numbers, which are the numbers that are the more accessible, more already expanded qualities that you have. And then we have karmic numbers that are the ones that you brought in to work with, you know, to strengthen your spiritual muscle with. And then we have goals numbers, which are the numbers that are there, which your soul is aspiring to, which are your future expression. And so we can decode all of that. And when I work with people, what we're doing is it's like a dance we're doing together. It's like a transmission that comes through because I'm reading the numbers, but I'm also relating to that person's field because it's not just like a cookie cutter, 3 equals this. It's also in relationship to you and your experience of life. and how that works. But
yes, because everyone would have had entirely different life experiences, which also then contributed to the expression.
Absolutely. I mean, how many people are called Joe Bloggs on the planet? You know, you can have exactly the same name as somebody else, but that doesn't mean you're going to have the same life. These are really potentials. These are energies. Like I said, it's a homing signal. If you think about it, you know, I've used your name several times during this podcast. Mm-hmm. We write our names down. We hear it. It's in our psyche unconsciously throughout the day, and it acts as a feedback loop. Now, it can be a very unconscious feedback loop, or it can be a conscious feedback loop where we're actually learning or growing using those frequencies consciously. So when I'm working with people, especially with the challenge numbers, we're looking at how can we use them as gifts? How can we help them grow that spiritual muscle? And actually, because I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, what I found is that the challenge or the karmic numbers, when they work with them, become the very gift that they get to give their clients, you know, because they've worked through it. Like they've known it. They've explored it from all angles. They've been through it. They've been in the trenches, and then they come out and they're like, I can help you. You don't have to fall into so many holes as I did. And so it becomes something, and I see it again and again with clients, that the numbers that were their very challenges are the numbers that become the theme of their business, you know, whether it's empowerment or creativity or stillness or, you know, leadership or whatever it might be. We're exploring that together. It's so powerful. It's so enriching to begin to listen to those feedback loops and get the information and then put them into action. It's very satisfying.
Beautiful. And so how can folks get in touch with you, Rachel?
Yes, my website is thenametemple.com. And I am also happy. I'm going to give you my phone number. I don't know if that's normal on your podcast, but I've often made myself accessible that way. 415-827-2623. But on my website, which is thenametemple.com, there is a free ebook, which is called The Gift in Your Name. And it's a little book that talks about some of the, it asks some general questions as well. It talks about how you can get your numerology reading done, but it also gives you some inquiry questions to start feeling into what is your name to you? You know, how do you feel about your name? You know how some people change their name because they don't like it or they embellish it. Yes. Or, and sometimes that works well and sometimes it doesn't. You know, I've worked with folks who changed their name and it was a disaster for them. And then we've come up with a better name, you know, because I can optimize the name and help them come up with a name that's actually a frequency match for their current name. Or I'll work with couples and we can look at how their names match with each other and work with some of the challenge points.
Ooh, so that would be really interesting.
Oh, yes.
And helpful, I imagine.
Very much so. I've done it with teams as well. You can look at the team members and see, okay, well, we got a sticky point here. How are we going to deal with it? Doesn't mean you have to change your name to be part of that team.
Right. It just brings it into the light.
So exactly. Brings it into the light. That's your point. Well, as soon as things become more conscious, it suddenly changes the energy around it. And there's a sense of like you said earlier, understanding. And then you can do something about it. You can be proactive. And so, yeah, it's very powerful.
Yes, and I have done it, and it is powerful. And I would even like to have a tune-up. So we'll talk about that another time.
Totally. Absolutely, Tessa, I'd be happy to do that. Tune-up, I love that. Especially, I love that you said tune-up, because that's also related to frequency, right? Yeah, let's just tune up my understanding here. Let's just tune up. Let's tweak this a little. So yeah, I love, but one thing I didn't share earlier was I have a background in physics. That was my undergraduate degree. And so I was fascinated by frequency, you know, the way things work, sound, light, how does all of that work? So it all connects, right?
It does. It definitely does. And maybe that's another, we'll have to have you on again and we'll get into that discussion because as a musician, I have my undergraduate in music. There's also a lot there that I explored. I think together we could have a really good time.
Oh, I would love that, Tessa. Yes. That's, hook me in for that one.
Rachel, I am so thrilled that you were here today and and I even learned more about you today, even though I know you very, very well. It's amazing. And I'm just so happy to get to play with you again and get to talk about what really has meaning for us, which is the soul and the journey and the richness of it all. And also bringing love and letting others know, letting our women know, the men know that they don't have to be alone on these journeys, that they can get support, that they can actually figure it out, you know, and they don't have to do what we did, which was spend like years, decades, right? Yeah. Trying this, that, and the other.
Battle-worn. Yes. I love, Tessa, that you use the word play as well, because music is something you play.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And I love to play. That's a beautiful metaphor for you.
Thank you for that. Well, thank you again. I'm in deep gratitude to you. And
thank
I look
you,
forward
Tessa.
To connecting with you personally at some point. And listeners, thank you for being here with Realize Soul. And I send you light. I send you love that you can begin to listen even more deeply and trust what you're hearing. So be free to connect with Rachel at thenametemple.com and also at realizesoul.com. You can come to visit me and say hello, listen to more podcasts, or send a note on over what you're noticing, what you're learning about yourself. Light and blessings to you all. Aho.
Thank you for listening to Realize Soul. If you love what you heard, please share us with your friends and be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast directory.